Chukaramuna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I return to the responses that the Prime Minister has given to the members for Bolsover and Portsmouth South? He said that he hadn't had any inappropriate discussions with New Zealand international executives regarding B's bid. Can I ask him which discussions he had with the said executives that he deemed were appropriate, who the executives were, and what the contents of those discussions were?
All these meetings are now published. He can look on the internet and see every single meeting that I had. And perhaps when he does that, he might ask his good friend, the Right Honourable Gentleman, the Leader of the Opposition, why he doesn't do the same thing.
Mr. Greg Mulholland.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister was right to recall Parliament and is also right to be concentrating on the immediate questions being asked. But will he ensure that the government commits to ensuring this does not happen again? And part of this involves looking at the Companies Act 2006, because it seems absurd that we quite rightly have a crime of corporate manslaughter, and yet directors of a company where there has been complicit criminality currently face no sanctions.
I think we can come on to this in the debate, but I think there are some lessons to be learnt for competition policy, for media policy, and I'm sure we'll be debating those later on, and I'll have some contributions to make on that.
Emma Reynolds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In her evidence yesterday, Rebecca Brooks stated that it was the Chancellor's idea to employ Andrew Wilson. Was she right, or was she merely trying to protect her friend the Prime Minister?
The decision was mine. In politics, in the end, the buck stops here with the Prime Minister. I made the decision, I defend the decision, and I've given a very full explanation about it today.
Mr. Edward Lee.
Is there not a real danger that this scandal will follow so many others? First of all, bad behaviour, then moral outrage, a lot of it hypocritical, then lengthy judicial inquiries, then more state regulation under the guise of independent regulation. So will my right honourable friend commit himself today to the good old conservative values of individual liberty and freedom?
Yes. Delighted to do that, and I do think the right honourable gentleman makes a good point. And that is why on the panel I was very concerned to make sure you have people who really understand how the television works, how newspapers work, how regulation works. And I think, for instance, the fact that George Jones, who spent many years in the lobby of this place, is going to be on that panel of experts, will help the committee inquiry to do its work.
Helen Goodman.
Thank you. I asked the Prime Minister whether Andy Coulson had been through the official positive vetting procedure. Instead of answering, he referred me to the rules of conduct for special advisers in the standard contract. Will he now answer the question?
He was vetted. He had a basic level of vetting. He wasn't able to see the most secret documents in the government. I can write to the Honourable Lady if she wants to have the absolutely full details of that vetting. It was all done in the proper way. He was subject to the special advisers' code of conduct. And someone shouted from behind me, he obeyed that code of conduct, unlike Damien McBride.
Speaker, there's been lots of talk of freedom, but freedom has to be under the law. Will my right honourable friend assure me that any future regulation of the press will balance the interests of ordinary men and women against the legitimate interest in maintaining a free press in this country?
Of course I give that assurance. I think one of the things that the Committee of Inquiry will have to battle with is that if you look at some of the great investigative stories that have bust open scandals in the past, sometimes there has been a public interest defence. My honourable friend is a lawyer and he will know about this. That's one of the reasons we're asking this in Committee of Inquiry, to try and do that very difficult work.
Mr. Jeremy Corbyn.
Prime Minister, another opportunity to say on what occasions and with whom and where, during the time since he became Prime Minister, he's ever discussed the Murdoch bid to take over B Sky B completely.
The discussion I had was to make sure I wasn't involved in this decision. So I didn't discuss it with the Culture Secretary. I didn't know about the timing of many of the key announcements. I wasn't involved. That was the sensible thing to do. Conduct that not necessarily was engaged in by my predecessors.
Sajid Javid.
Former Prime Minister, the member for Kirkcaldy and Cowdenbeath, said that he wanted to hold an inquiry into phone hacking and journalistic practices. but his astonishing claim that the civil servants had stopped him from doing so, the same civil servants that presumably told him not to sell our gold at record low prices. Can the Prime Minister tell me if he inherited any plans from the former government on this inquiry?
All I can say is the idea the former Prime Minister had to have this inquiry was never raised with the official opposition. And one of the things I saw in the press over the last couple of days is actually one of his former colleagues saying he thought that it was a proposal that Gordon made to himself.
Mr. Jack Dromey.
To...
The exchanges won't continue until we have order. It's pretty straightforward. Jack Dromey.
To hire the hackers of Millie Dowler meant that Andy Coulson either was guilty of being complicit in a corrupt culture or that he presided over acts of pure evil. What were the warnings given to the Prime Minister by the Deputy Prime Minister and the Lord Ashdown not to appoint Andy Coulson, and why did he ignore those warnings?
I have to say to the Honourable Gentleman, we do still have in this country the idea that you are innocent until you are proven guilty. Now, as I've said, I hired Andy Coulson on the basis of assurances that he gave me he did not know about hacking. After all, that is why he resigned as editor of the News of the World. And incidentally, after he resigned, the very first person to ring him up and wish him well was who? Any guesses? Gordon Brown.
Nicky Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In her evidence to the Select Committee yesterday, Rebecca Brooks spoke about the number of times that she'd visited Number 10 or Chequers, up to six times a year. Does the Prime Minister not agree that calls for, on the other side, for transparency and disclosure of information to the inquiry sit very badly with the collective amnesia being shown about the contacts between Labour and News International?
The point I would make is we've all got to be open about the fact that both front benches spend a lot of time courting Rupert Murdoch, courting News International, courting the Russian who owns The Independent and the Daily Mail and the BBC while we're at it. Everybody has done it, and we've all got to admit that this sort of relationship needs to be changed and put on a more healthy basis. Now, we're prepared to admit it, that basically, if you like, the clock has stopped on my watch, and I'm determined to sort it out. Now, from a sedentary position, the Shadow Chancellor says we didn't hire Andy Coulson. Look, you hired Damien McBride. You had Alistair Campbell. You had Alistair Campbell falsifying documents in government. You've still got Tom Baldwin working in your office. Yeah. Gotcha.
Order. Order. Can I just remind the House that I've not been hiring people at all? Mr. John Cryer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Order. Order. The House will listen to Mr. John Cryer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On July the 8th, the Prime Minister said that he commissioned a company to do a basic background check on Coulson. Now, for the fourth time, I'm asking for the name of the company. It's a pretty simple question. Just come to the dispatch box and name the company.
Yes. We did hire a company to do a basic background check, and that is an entirely appropriate thing to do, and it was an entirely appropriate report. But I have to say, the reason I hired him was, above all, the assurances that he gave me. That is the key part of the decision, and that's what I'm prepared to say.
Mr. Gary Streeter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I thank my right honourable friend for his swift and decisive action in setting up these inquiries, which will get to the bottom of these very serious issues? But looking forward, can I also add my voice to those encouraging him not to be overly distracted by this over the next few months, but focus instead on the things that my constituents are concerned about: the economy, their jobs, the reform of health service, and the contagion in Europe.
My honourable friend is entirely right. We have to sort this issue out. It takes cross-party agreement to do it. We've worked well over the judicial inquiry, over the panel, over the terms of reference, over the police inquiry, all things this government has taken action on. But we do want to get onto the other issues about which our constituents care so much.
Ryan Lucas.
Will the Prime Minister immediately put on hold his plans to introduce elected police commissioners while we learn the lessons of the last few weeks? Because we should reflect on the risks of things being swept under the carpet if we put someone whose political fortune depends on the success of the force in sole charge of trying to hold them to account.
Yeah. I'm afraid I don't agree with the Honourable Lady. I think what one of the things this whole episode shows is that our police service needs reform. And the idea of greater accountability, with them having to account to someone who can stand up for local people, is a thoroughly good idea.
Dr. Julian Huppert.
Oh, no. Mr. Speaker, the Home Affairs Select Committee was told evidence about serious failings in corporate governance at the Met. Almost all our current and former police witnesses passed responsibility up or down the chain. There was lack of clarity about who made decisions. We were told that it happens all the time that somebody can get a job based on an emailed CV sent from an assistant commissioner straight to the Director of Human Resources. Will the Prime Minister ensure that, as well as looking at criminal matters, we look at this massive failure of corporate governance in the Metropolitan Police?
Yeah. I'm sure that the inquiry will look at that, but indeed I think you'll find the IPCC will be looking at that specific issue concerning John Yates even before the inquiry gets underway.
Hanson.
Can the Prime Minister confirm what the Metropolitan Police have told the Home Secretary, namely that News International only began cooperating more fully with the inquiry in January 2011, shortly after Mr. Coulson resigned from Downing Street? Is he not just guilty of bad judgment in employing him, but also in keeping him post for so long?
Yeah. The point is that the Metropolitan Police made that very clear to the Home Affairs Select Committee, but what I would say is what I've said all along is the police should pursue this without fear or favour. They should go where the evidence leads. They should arrest whoever they choose. They couldn't have a clearer message or more support from the government.
Claire Perry.
Mr. Speaker, today is the anniversary of the moon landing.
The Honourable Lady, Miss Beard, I don't know why people sing ooh when I call the Honourable Lady for the advice. A very extraordinary choice of response. I want to hear the Honourable Lady, Claire Perry.
I agree, Mr. Speaker. Today, people will know, is the anniversary of the moon landing, around which conspiracy theorists like to cluster. May I urge the Prime Minister that rather than listening to the vapid conspiracy Hackgate theorists, he focus on the facts. Can he tell us what he's doing to toughen up the rules around the use of checkers to make sure it is never used for slumber parties for media tycoons again?
I think I could see the development of a beautiful relationship there just for a brief moment. I think slumber parties are... If it's perfectly all right, I don't rule out my children having slumber parties, if that is acceptable to the Honourable Lady, but I promise to leave Rebecca Wade out of it.
Mr. Barry Shearman.
I could press the Prime Minister on a question previously given to him by the Right Honourable Gentleman for my Right Honourable Friend from Greenwich. In the last year, has he been briefed by the intelligence services about the phone hacking and surveillance of a senior public servant? Has he had that briefing, and will the intelligence services be requested to give evidence to the inquiry?
We don't discuss intelligence issues in this House. If he has something he wants to come and talk to me about this issue, he'd absolutely beat a path to my door and I'll see him.
Chishti.
Speaker, can the Prime Minister clarify and confirm that the law on media ownership was watered down under the 2003 Communications Act, which for the first time allowed non-EEA companies to own UK radio and television?
He makes a very important point when a lot of the sound and fury comes from the party opposite. There was a progressive liberalisation of media ownership delivered under the last government, and they should do well to remember that.
Kerry McCarthy.
The Prime Minister has a number of times now brushed off questions about my honourable friend, the member for West Bromwich East's letter to him. Can he confirm, did he see that letter, and if so, what did he do about it? And if he didn't see it, can he go back to Downing Street and find out what happened to it?
Of course, I'm shown all letters that are sent to me by Members of Parliament, and I will do exactly as the Honourable Lady says. I will go back and make sure that a robust reply is sent.
Mr. Aidan Burley.
Can I ask the Prime Minister, did he receive any advice from the editor of The Guardian, from Lord Ashdown, or from the Deputy Prime Minister about the hiring of Tom Baldwin by the Leader of the Opposition?
Yeah. Well, I have received quite a number of representations from honourable members and quite a few from others as well.
Mr. Barry Gardiner.
Welcome the Prime Minister's transparency in making available the 26 meetings with News Corp and News International. I welcome the fact that he was able to say that no inappropriate conversations took place between him and B Sky B. can he tell us that no appropriate conversations about the bid took place at those meetings also?
All my conversations are appropriate.
Mr. Greg Hands.
Is the Prime Minister aware that under the 2005 Inquiries Act, and contrary to the evidence given by his predecessor, it is actually under the terms of the Act the job of a minister to cause an inquiry, not the Cabinet Secretary?
Yes, I believe that my honourable friend is right, and this does go to the point about the speech made last week by the former Prime Minister. In the end, ministers have the responsibility to make these decisions, and I don't think it's particularly noble to try and hide behind and blame your civil servant.
Mr. Graham Morris.
Speaker, in his statement, the Prime Minister told us that Neil Wallis, formerly a deputy editor at News of the World, wasn't employed or paid by the Conservative Party, but it has transpired he's been advising Andy Coulson, at least in the run-up to the general election. Has the Prime Minister made any inquiries about the exact nature of that advice?
Yeah. Yes, I have. As the honourable gentleman says, I was told about this on Sunday. He wasn't employed by, he wasn't contracted by, he wasn't paid by, but he did offer some informal advice. The reason this information has come out is because we put it out, and we will be equally transparent when we get to the bottom of this.
Margot James.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My constituents feel that relationships between News International and politicians have been too close for many years, but they are very shocked by the association with the police. But can the Prime Minister assure the House that the remit of the independent review, which I congratulate him on setting up, will include guidance on preserving the freedom of the press to undertake the investigative journalism which has long been a good tradition in this country?
No, I can reassure about that. The terms of reference do refer to the importance of a free press. And I think the panel, when you think of having people like Shami Chakrabarty, like George Jones, like Eleanor Goodman, like a former press regulator, someone who's chaired the FT, I think it's a good mixture of experts to help advise Lord Justice Leveson to make sure we get the balance right between appropriate regulation, but yes, a free and vibrant press.
Anne Clwyd.
Mr. Speaker, 2 years ago in this House, I made this point. Given Mr. Coulson's dubious reputation, none of us on the Labour benches can feel comfortable while this man is allowed to wander the corridors here. Can't we, at the very least, while he is under suspicion, take his pass away from him? His pass, Mr. Speaker, was not taken away from him. He was able to wander freely round this place. Would the Prime Minister like to tell us now, since he obviously cannot smell a rat when he has one in his midst, Can he tell us whether he has any other dodgy characters in Number 10 that we should beware of?
I don't think it's really worthy of the Honourable Lady to use terms like that. As I've said, I choose to judge people by the conduct of the work they do for me, and I would put Andy Coulson's conduct at Number 10 Downing Street against the conduct of Damien McBride and Alistair Campbell and Tom Baldwin and all the rest of it, who did so much damage under the last government.
Order, I would like to accommodate many more colleagues on this important subject, but in order for me to do so, I require brevity. Mr. William Cash.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister has referred several times to the future of regulation of the media, not just the press. In the terms of reference that we've been told about, he says that the inquiry should look not just at the press, but other media organisations, including broadcasters and social, if there is any evidence that they've been involved in criminal activities. Does this preclude what the 17 Select Committee chairman and others have called for, which is an extension of the terms of reference to deal with regulation of all the media and not merely the press alone?
I have to say to the honourable gentleman, the change in the terms of reference was a direct response to the 17 Select Committee chairman, because we wanted to listen to their views and say that broadcasters and other social media could be included if there was evidence of wrongdoing. We're not trying to have an inquiry that gets so wide that it can't make progress on these vital issues, but I think we have listened to what he said and responded very positively.
Mr. Dennis McShane.
In the interest of transparency, will the Prime Minister now publish
any emails between Andy Coulson and the Home Office?
Well, I'm looking at being as transparent as we possibly can be. We have the freedom of, we don't just have the Freedom of Information Act, where you can make requests. What this government is doing is pushing out a huge amount of data, including publishing the recent emails with Ed Llewellyn.
Mr. Peter Bone.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister has rightly published the names of people who have stayed overnight at Chequers, and it includes Rupert Murdoch and Rebecca Brooks, but also other journalists. Given what he said about the government getting too close to the media, Mrs. Bone was wondering this morning whether those visits would stop, and it would open up a number of weekends, and I understand that she's free.
I think as long as Mrs. Bone doesn't insist on a slumber party, I think that's a very, very good idea.
Mr. Christopher Leslie.
Mr. Speaker, can I ask the Prime Minister what the Deputy Prime Minister told him about Andy Coulson's employment, and when did he say that to him?
The point that was made by a number of people, Deputy Prime Minister included, was just to ask about whether it was right to give a job to Andy Coulson, because clearly I'd made a decision. This man had resigned from the News of the World over the hacking scandal because it happened on his watch. He gave me an assurance. Hold on, I'll answer the question. He gave me an assurance he didn't know about the hacking scandal, and I took that decision. And that is a judgment I don't hide from, I don't run away from, and I'm totally accountable for it. Now, some people questioned that judgment, of which the Deputy Prime Minister was one, and that's why I've been so clear, this is my decision, a decision I'm responsible for, that people will hold me accountable for. Now, today, I've been utterly frank about what it would be like with 20/20 hindsight, what it would be like with double vision, but I don't believe in politicians running away from the decisions they made. I don't do that.
Sir Munt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister will have had very little time to consider my question of last week, which related to stopping the scandal of taxpayers having to fund pensions for police who turn out to have undertaken criminal activities. However, he's widened the scope to cover all the forces, and in the financial pressures where a number of forces are having to make or asking people if they'd like to become voluntary redundant, could he please ensure that no one found guilty of wrongdoing is able to keep any payout or bonus or windfall of retiring or taking voluntary redundancy?
Well, I have to say what the Honourable Lady says makes a lot of sense. I think she should make those representations to the Windsor Review and indeed to the judicial inquiry as well.
Fiona McTaggart.
Mr. Speaker, in reply to an earlier question, the Prime Minister said that the relationship between politicians and the media meant that the important issue of media regulation was put on the back burner. So why does he think that putting a politically elected commissioner in charge of every police force, rather than just the Met, doesn't mean that similarly difficult questions will be avoided in future?
I'm afraid I don't see the read across at all, because the elected police commissioner will want to respond to the demands of the public for effective, accountable, beat-based policing. So there will be, if you like, a bit of tension between the elected commissioner and the chief constable. And I think as long as there's proper operational independence, I think that can be a good thing.
Mr. Graham Stewart.
Mr. Speaker, will the Prime Minister ensure that the inquiry that he's announced into the unlawful practices in the media cover the allegation made by Lord Ashcroft that Tom Baldwin, then a News International journalist, authorised or was part of efforts unlawfully to access the Conservative Party's bank accounts?
I'm sure that the inquiry can look at this. If there is evidence of illegal activity, then some very big questions have to be answered. And I hope the Leader of the Opposition will be asking those questions and making sure he gets good answers.
Kevin Brennan.
Were there any meetings between Neil Wallace and Andy Coulson when Andy Coulson was working for the Prime Minister at No. 10 Downing Street?
I don't have that information, and I'll have to get back to the Honourable Gentleman. Far worse would be to give an answer that could turn out to be inaccurate, so I'll get back to the Honourable Gentleman with that information.
Mr. Andrew Salou.
Speaker, I think members on this side are right that all our constituents do want us to move on from excessive focus on this issue, but could I ask the Prime Minister how he sees us being able to end the practice of journalists regularly paying police officers for a quick scoop?
I think we need to do a number of things. Obviously, there's the police investigation into corruption, which is now going to be overseen by someone who came from outside the Met. Also, there's going to be the Dame Elizabeth Filkin work to try and improve the ethics and standards. But also, there's going to be the inquiry, which will be able to do a job of work on this. On the panel is a former chief constable, so there'll be understanding of how the police service works, and we can get to the bottom and deal with this problem.
Hugh Bailey.
Confidence in the police has obviously been affected by the allegations of bribery and corruption of police officers. Will the Prime Minister look at whether there's a need for us to establish, as in the United States, an independent police force that can police the police? And will he give the House a guarantee that the Bribery Act will not be amended while all these investigations and inquiries are going on?
On his first point, I mean, we do have the Independent Police Complaints Commission, which is independent of the police. I think there are two questions, both of which my right honourable friend addressed. Firstly, we've got to make sure it's got the resources and the ability to investigate the police. And secondly, we have to look at whether we are swift enough at calling in an outside police force when there is evidence or allegations of wrongdoing, so that people can see this is being done effectively.
Brandon Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week we heard an impassioned speech from Gordon Brown outlining his concerns on hacking and his desire to have an inquiry. Yet yesterday we heard evidence to the Select Committee that he absolutely never raised that subject despite the close relationship with Rupert Murdoch. Could the Prime Minister help me reconcile those two separate issues?
I'm afraid I can't, but I think the evidence speaks for itself.
I just remind the House that when members refer to other members, they should do so by referring to their constituencies and not by name. Mr. Clive Efford.
When the Prime Minister was Leader of the Opposition, was phone hacking ever discussed in any of the meetings he had with John Yates or any other Metropolitan Police officer?
Well, I've had a range of meetings with John Yates over the last year, mostly about terrorism. Of course, I don't recall. I mean, one of I don't recall every single conversation I had, and you'd be mad to try and pretend that you do. I mean, you'd be superhuman to remember every conversation that you have. What I do know is almost all the conversations I've had with John Yates over the last year have been over terrorist issues. And the key point about my Chief of Staff's email is he was trying to actually make sure the police didn't do anything inappropriate.
Mr. David Evenett.
I welcome my right honourable friend's statement today and the processes set in motion to investigate this whole affair. Would he agree with me that it's essential these issues referring to the Metropolitan Police are dealt with speedily so that the hard-working and effective police across London get onto the maximum effect to do the job, a job they do fantastically well for all of us in our capital?
Yeah. I think that is hugely important. You know, there are thousands of police officers doing a great job in London. They'll be reading all about this, and I don't want it to sap their morale and sap the work they do, and this very clear message should go out from this House. We still have a very, very fine police service in this country, and we back it.
Mary Glyndon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can the Prime Minister confirm whether any of his officials now in Downing Street knew that Neil Wallis advised Andy Coulson before the general election?
Now, all I can say to the Honourable Lady is the first I was told of this, to my knowledge, was Sunday evening, that Neil Wallis, as I say, wasn't employed by, wasn't contracted by, wasn't paid by the Conservative Party, but did some work for Andy Coulson. As we get to the bottom of exactly what that work was and who knew what when and all the rest of it, we will put that information on the record. I think it's very important when you're being asked all these questions, there is no conspiracy theory, I think we proved that this afternoon, but to give accurate answers to these questions.
Tom Brake.
Today's Select Committee hearings were heavy on entertainment but rather light when it came to hard facts. Does their inconclusiveness not point to the need for the urgent inquiries that have been established? They should be hard-hitting, well-resourced, wide-ranging and look at all aspects of the phone hacking scandal, corruption, nepotism and the rather seedy and obsequious relationship between the press, the police and politicians.
Well, as my honourable friend says, that is the reason for setting up this inquiry, to get to the bottom of this information. To be fair to the Select Committees yesterday, I think they did make some good progress of discovering some important evidence about all the relationships and some of that evidence we've been discussing here today.
Rowan Smith.
Speaker, would the Prime Minister confirm that it's highly unusual for such a senior adviser to the Prime Minister not to be properly vetted? And would he confirm that it was his decision not to fully vet Mr. Coulson, including asking family and friends about his past life and past activities?
No, it wasn't unusual at all. Andy Coulson was cleared In the normal way that special advisers are. He was cleared to secret. He was not sent papers above this level. And like former administrations, we set out all the names of the staff we employ as special advisers. Once again, I feel that some honourable members are sort of looking for some sort of secret behind a curtain that simply isn't there.
Mr. Richard Ottaway.
Yeah.
When it comes to restoring public confidence in the media and the police, will he agree that the steps that he's outlined today show that he's made more progress on this in 13 months than the last government did in 13 years?
My honourable friend makes a very important point, which is they had plenty of opportunities over 13 years. Plenty of opportunities. The shadow Chancellor and the shadow leader of the opposition were there all the way through. They could have promoted this judicial inquiry. They could have responded to the Select Committee. They could have done something about the Information Commissioner reports. They were the slumber party. That's what they were.
Sharon Hodgson.
Can the Prime Minister give the House a categoric assurance that in his time spent working in Downing Street, Andy Coulson never saw any briefings into the police investigation into hacking or had any involvement into the government's response to it?
Well, the point I've made is that it's not routine for people in Downing Street to be given operational information about a police investigation. That's the whole thing that my chief of staff was quite rightly trying to prevent. Let me just take the honourable lady back to the time when Tony Blair was Prime Minister and there was an investigation into Cash for Honours. Just imagine if the police had pitched up and started briefing officials with operational intelligence. It would have been an appalling thing, and I can't see why she asked this point.
Stephen Metcalfe.
Can I congratulate my right honourable friend on the leadership that he has shown in establishing such a wide-ranging and robust inquiry? Can I ask why he thinks that following the Motorman investigation, which revealed details of 305 journalists and 30 newspapers and magazines, a similar inquiry was not established then?
This goes to the point. We have to be frank. Look, I think that the last government wasn't on this at all. Frankly, the last opposition, us, we should have done more. But they do have to take some responsibility for repeated warnings and repeatedly ignoring those warnings. I take my responsibility. I couldn't have been franker about that today. Every time I mention this, I talk about the failing of the opposition to do its job. But just once in a while, it'd be nice to hear a little bat squeak of responsibility from the party opposite.
Mr. Mike Gates.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister has said that Neil Wallis was never employed by the Conservative Party. Can he confirm that Mr. Wallis or any of his companies never received any payment from individuals or organisations working on behalf of the Conservative Party?
What I've said very clearly is the Conservative Party didn't employ him, didn't have a contract with him, didn't pay him. He did, as I understand it, do some informal work for Andy Coulson. The reason we know that is because we announced that before the House of Commons went down. We wanted to get this information out. And when we get to the bottom of the work that he did, unlike the complete lack of transparency we sometimes get from the party opposite, we'll make that detail available.
Dan Biles.
Did the Prime Minister hear the recent remarks from the noble Lord Kinnock, who suggested that as a result of this inquiry, politicians should impose what he called balance on the media? Does he share my view that that would be a very dangerous...
I do. Look, I mean, we want a free and vigorous press. Sometimes it's infuriating. But the idea of having sort of off-press and sort of equal coverage given to every point of view, I think would kill the vibrancy of the press. And I have to say, respect him as I do, if we had to have equal coverage of every Neil Kinnock speech, the press with papers would take a lot longer to read every morning.
Chris Williamson.
When Andy Coulson stayed at Chequers after he resigned, did the Prime Minister take the opportunity to talk to him about the phone hacking allegations, whether there was any truth in it, and what his reasons were for resigning?
His reasons for resigning were well set out at the time. He felt he was not able to go on doing his job with all the allegations and the swirl of information around, and he felt he couldn't do his job. He needed to move on, and I think that was the right decision. I've been absolutely clear about my reasons for hiring him, about the work he did at No. 10 Downing Street. I revealed that he stayed at Chequers. You don't have to reveal private guests that you pay for yourself. The last government didn't do that. I've done that because I want to be utterly transparent about my relationship, about my decisions, about my judgments. I'm very happy to stand on those judgments and let people be the judge. That's the only thing you can do in this job.
Sarah Newton.
Mr. Speaker. Right Honourable Friend, share my frustration. We've been here for the best part of 2 hours, and have we heard from the members opposite any recognition of their part to play in the situation we face out there? Should we not be working across this House to restore the confidence in politics, in the press and in the police that our constituents urgently demand of us?
I think the Honourable Lady is right. The opposition came here with a choice. They could have risen to the level of events, helped to deal with this problem, and responded to what our constituents care about. Instead, we had a sort of litany of rather pathetic conspiracy theories to try and win a political game, and it's been a complete and utter failure.
Steve McCabe.
Have Sir Paul Stevenson and John Yates had to pay too high a price for Andy Coulson's second chance?
What I would say is, if you look at the evidence that Sir Paul Stevenson, who I respect enormously and I think did some very good things at the Met, and John Yates, Sir Paul Stevenson said very clearly yesterday that the circumstances surrounding his resignation were completely different to the circumstances in No. 10 Downing Street. And frankly, if you look at, and we've discussed this a lot today, the responsibility I have for hiring Andy Coulson, the work he did at No. 10, the fact he's not there anymore, that is, I would argue, completely different to the issues at the Met about a failed police investigation, about allegations of police corruption, about very serious problems in that organisation, and all the reasons that Paul Stevenson set out yesterday. I respect what he did, but he himself says the situations are different.
Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister has shown in his statement that his private office has behaved with absolutely compelling propriety, which compares amazingly favourably with sofa government. And I wonder if the Prime Minister would agree with me that the row over it is broadly synthetic and hugely over-egged.
I think my honourable friend makes a good point. What I would say about Ed Llewellyn, and members opposite know this is someone who has actually served our country working for, whether it was Chris Patton or Paddy Ashdown, in Kosovo, in Bosnia, in Hong Kong. He is, yes, of course, he's a Conservative supporter and a friend of mine, but he's a very loyal public servant who's done great things for this country, who I think is utterly beyond reproach. And I think on this occasion, as so many, his judgment was proved absolutely right.
Mr. Nick Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Prime Minister, can you tell us what specific advice the Deputy Prime Minister gave you against employing Andy Coulson?
I'm very happy to have answered this question once already. I can set the answer to music if you like, which is, like other people, some people looked at Andy Coulson and the fact he had been a tabloid editor at the News of the World and had resigned because of what happened to the News of the World, some people advised me not to take him on. Now, I made the decision on the basis of the assurances he gave me. I couldn't have been more frank about it. And frankly, there is only now one tabloid editor left in an office of either the Prime Minister or the Leader of the Opposition. There's a tabloid Mirror editor sitting in his office, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Mirror don't have some questions to answer pretty soon.
Simon Kirby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does the Prime Minister think the Leader of the Opposition should apologise for Damien McBride? Yes.
Well, this is actually, I have, and the Chancellor has too. We did get, finally, although it took a while, an apology for the appalling thing. This was someone who was a special advisor who actually was sitting around casting appalling aspersions against people on the opposition front bench. And when you compare that conduct with the fact the conduct of Andy Coulson at No. 10 Downing Street, who in his time at work no one is making complaint about, I think it speaks volumes.
Rian Lucas.
Did the Prime Minister, when he was leader of the opposition,
discuss with John Yates the issue of phone hacking.
Well, as I say, I can't remember every conversation I've ever had with John Yates. I did meet John Yates in opposition. I cannot remember how many times I met him. I've met him many more times in government. And predominantly what I've discussed with him is the issue of terrorism.
George Freeman.
Will the Prime Minister agree with me that one of the most lamentable episodes in this sad affair was the death of David Kelly, a proud civil servant whose name was thrown to the media pack, putting him under intolerable pressure, which led to his suicide? Would he give me an undertaking that the investigation will be given the remit to cover and look back at how that event unfolded?
The point I make to my old friend is we have to be careful that this inquiry doesn't go completely viral, as it were. It has to focus on the issues in hand. Obviously, the issue of David Kelly was it looked at in detail in terms of the Hutton inquiry, and I think that this inquiry has got to make some progress.
Natasha Engel.
Last week, Mr. Speaker, I read in the Daily Mail that the Prime Minister was about to appoint the ex-BBC journalist Guido Harry, but that after an intervention by Rebecca Brooks, he changed his mind and employed Andy Coulson. Is that right?
She specifically rejected that point yesterday. Guido now works for my good friend and colleague, the Mayor of London, and does a brilliant job.
Jason McCartney.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Speaker. I have a question about the conduct of Andy Coulson whilst he is at number 10. Did Andy Coulson ever suggest smearing members of the opposition whilst he is working in number 10, like Damien McBride, who was so embraced by the former occupants of number 10?
Yeah. My honourable friend makes a very powerful point and one that will be noted.
Mr. Ian Davidson.
Would the Prime Minister agree that we do need to move on, not least because we want to watch without distraction the collapse of the euro? And would he agree, therefore, that if we are going to move on and get closure, he has got to be a bit more frank in answering directly questions such as those from the member for West Bromwich East and Leighton and Wanstead?
First of all, while I share the honourable gentleman's lack of enthusiasm for the euro, we do have to recognise in this country that is where 40% of our exports go, and if there is turmoil in the eurozone, it will not be good for Britain. We should be very clear about that, and we should be helpful and cooperative with our European partners to try and help them sort out their problems. As for answering questions, I don't think I could have given clearer answers to all the questions that people have asked in this House. And I think, frankly, I know a lot of honourable members came here this afternoon trying to find some conspiracy theory. They've looked, and they haven't found one.
Mr. Duncan Hames.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday my Liberal Democrat colleague, the Honourable Member for Torbay, tested witnesses in terms of willful blindness. Does the Prime Minister agree with us that those in charge of a responsible and free press should not get away with a willful blindness defence to evade responsibility for its acts?
Yeah. There is no real defence like that. I mean, in fact, look, what's going to happen now is there is going to be a police investigation that's underway that will ask exactly who was culpable and who knew what when. Then, after that is over, the second stage of the judicial inquiry will go over all of that information again, not requiring the bar of criminal prosecution. And it may be that it's then that we get the real evidence of who knew what when, but we couldn't have tougher processes to get to the answers that people want.
Lesterson.
Will the Prime Minister define for us what he regards as an appropriate conversation between him and News International about B Sky B? Yeah.
I thought Rebecca Brooks defined it excellently, one which you could also repeat in front of a select committee.
Sam Geimer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I might be about to blot my copybook with you, but in response to your comment that you are not hiring anyone, can I gently point out that you did hire Tim Hayes, who was a journalist for The Times, owned by News International Words. But to the substance of my question, the Prime Minister is right to say that we should get to the bottom of this because ordinary people care about it. But ordinary people also care about and will be affected by what is happening in the Eurozone. Can the Prime Minister let us know that the same amount of time we're dedicating to this, discussing conspiracy theories from the other side of the House, will be dedicated...
We've got the order. The Honourable Gentleman will resume his seat. That's quite long enough. The Prime Minister.
Well, I think the Honourable Gentleman has been extremely brave, if I might say so, Mr. Speaker. And as Parliament's going down for 6 weeks, perhaps it'll be long enough for everyone to forget what he's just said. He's right, though, that we should be focusing as well what is happening in the Eurozone, and my right honourable friend the Chancellor and I are holding a series of meetings to make sure that we get our response right.
Mr. Alex Cunningham.
Does the Prime Minister agree with the member for Grantham and Stamford who told Newsnight viewers that this scandal was just a little local difficulty and therefore it was okay for the Prime Minister to leave the country at the very height of the crisis?
I didn't watch Newsnight. I don't always catch it. But what I would say about this is I think it is important that the British Prime Minister stands up for British business, for British exports, for British jobs, and loads up aeroplanes with businessmen and gets around the world, as I've done, to China, to India and to Africa. And I think to suggest that because there are issues you have to answer at home, you should cancel a trip like that, I think is talking Britain down, and I think the opposition should be better than that.
Yeah. Mark Menzies.
Speaker, in recent days the work of select committees have stood this House in good stead and done us proud. But in 2003 a select committee warned of a catalogue of deplorable practices in the media, of potential of payments being made by journalists to the police. The investigation that the Prime Minister has announced, will we go that far back and really understand why the advice and the warnings of that select committee were ignored?
I'm sure the judicial inquiry will do that. One of the issues it's looking at is the relationship between politicians and the media and the conduct of both.
Mr. Stephen Timms.
Thank you. Speaker, if the Prime Minister had known the new information about Andy Coulson given to his Chief of Staff by The Guardian, would he have gone ahead with the appointment? Surely he should have been passed that information.
I explained all this at question time last week. I mean, the point is this. If I'd been told proper evidence that Andy Coulson knew about hacking, I wouldn't have hired him. If I was given proper evidence that he knew about hacking, I would have fired him. I couldn't be clear about it.
Alex Shelbrooke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Could I congratulate the Prime Minister on taking the lead when new evidence came to light of establishing an independent inquiry? And could I urge him to assure my constituents in Elmet and Rothwell that having got the independent inquiry underway, he will focus on making sure that their jobs and livelihoods are protected with the economic tsunami which is round the corner?
Yeah. Yeah. My honourable friend makes an important point. One of the things we can now do is leave the public inquiry to answer a lot of these very difficult questions and refocus ourselves on issues around the economy and the Eurozone and jobs that badly need answers.
Mr. Michael McCann.
Mr. Speaker, can I ask the Prime Minister a question which will both help him to be transparent and also quash a conspiracy theory? What was the name of the company who vetted Andy Coulson?
Yes.
The point is, we employed a company to do this work. It wasn't an issue, it wasn't something we were planning to publish. It's something that companies and businesses do all the time. But in the end, the responsibility is mine for employing him on the basis of the assurances that he gave.
Mr. Simon Hart.
Is the Prime Minister aware that the last administration spent over £11 million on advertising with News International? Does this practice still continue?
Well, you've seen an enormous cut in the government advertising budget, just one of the many things we've done to cut out the waste provided by the party opposite.
Oh, man.
Mr. Speaker, at Chequers or anywhere else, on how many occasions has the Prime Minister discussed this scandal with Andy Coulson since Mr. Coulson left his employment?
Yes.
Well, as the House knows, he came to stay with me in March. I haven't spoken to him for weeks. And as I said, while he worked for me, this was something that obviously was discussed on an ongoing basis. And just to repeat, if I'd had evidence that he knew about the hacking, I wouldn't have employed him. And if I had someone who was working for me, I would have relieved him from the appointment.
Mr. Marcus Jones.
Speaker, the Prime Minister's predecessor, the Honourable Member for Kilcoyne and Cowden Beath, said that he wanted to hold a public inquiry into this matter.
No.
Can the Prime Minister tell the House, on taking office, what detailed preparations were left behind for him in Number 10 on this very important issue?
Just like everything else, I found a complete mess.
Mr. Andy Slaughter.
Regards the use made by Andy Coulson of Neil Wallace in the run-up to the general election, the Prime Minister said today that he would be transparent when he got to the bottom of it. Will that inquiry be independent, and why can't he publish today any documents relating to the use of Mr. Wallace?
The point I'm making, I want to get to the bottom of the question he asked about what advice Mr. Wallace gave to Mr. Coulson, and when I find that, I will reveal it. Perhaps he'd take the time to ask the leader of his own party why he won't reveal his media contacts going back to the election. I'm being much more transparent than the party opposite.
Angie Bray.
Speaker. The Prime Minister will recall that the previous Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, intervened with an EU commissioner to ensure the continuing monopoly of Rupert Murdoch over
the Honourable Member, order. Can I just remind the Honourable Member, I have made the point already and reminded the House, that reference to members should be by constituency. Angie Bray.
The Right Honourable Member for Kirkcaldy. And would he not agree that this doesn't exactly square with his statement to the House last week when he said that he had ever done anything to further News International interests?
Well, I do think there is quite a contrast, let me put it like this, between the speech he made last week and the evidence we heard yesterday.
Sir Ian Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If the Prime Minister point blank refuses to tell this House the name of the company that vetted Andy Coulson, will he place the documents with regards to that vetting in the library of this House?
Let's be clear, the responsibility for hiring him is mine and mine alone. That is the responsibility I take. You might not like the answer, but that's it.
David Rutley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Like many other members, I'm sure, I've been contacted by local newspapers who are concerned about the prospects of new regulation at a time of increasing pressure on their circulation. Can my right honourable friend assure them that new regulations will not be overly heavy-handed on local press?
The honourable gentleman makes a good point. We don't want a new regulatory system to punish the innocent, as it were, who are just providing good local newspapers. But there are problems with ethics and issues that need to be looked at. We need to make sure that it's proportionate.
Mr. Wayne David.
In the New York Times article of September of last year, it was stated that, and I quote, one former editor said Coulson was talking freely with colleagues about phone hacking. Given that the Prime Minister has read this article, how can he say he had no new evidence of a link between Coulson and hacking?
Obviously, I discussed these allegations at the time, and you know, there was not proper foundation for them. And that is the view, not just of me, but of many people who follow this issue. Now, look, of course, there is an investigation underway, and I couldn't have been franker. If it turns out that Andy Coulson knew about hacking, it won't just be a matter of profound regret and a matter of profound apology, an apology I've given today. It will also be an issue for criminal prosecution.
Damien Hines.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister is rightly taking the lead in openness and transparency. Would he now encourage the opposition to do likewise and open the vault on what happened under their watch, particularly the activities of Damien McBride and the culture that allowed that to happen?
Yeah. I do. Look, we have set out since the election all the contacts we've had. It's now for others to follow suit, not just former Labour leaders, but current Labour leaders as well.
Anas Sarwar.
The Prime Minister cannot name the company that did the vetting of Andy Coulson. Can he confirm that the company or any of its directors did not make any donations to the Conservative Party?
I'll write to the Honourable Gentleman. I don't want to give an answer that isn't accurate.
Nigel Mills.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After a decade of spin, I welcome the Prime Minister's attempt to sort out the relationship between politicians and the media for the long term and not just to manage the news cycle. Would he now recommend that local councils, government departments and quangos start dispensing with all their own spin doctors so we can be truly rid of that spin culture?
Yeah. I think my honourable friend makes a good point. There's an enormous amount of money still spent by local authorities on local newspapers, on their own free local newspapers, and that is injurious to the newspaper industry. And I think there's a strong case for recognising the importance of a strong regional and local newspaper industry.
Angela Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The New York Times last September said that the reporter it had spoken to was one of two people who said Coulson was present during discussions about phone hacking. Did the Prime Minister discuss that allegation with Andy Coulson, and if not, why not?
Well, as I've said, I had a number of conversations all the time during his employment, and in the end, the swirl of allegations is why he left. But what we have now is not only a criminal investigation where people are being interviewed by the police and the police can go without fear or favour, but also a public inquiry. Now, none of these things happened properly under the last government. They're happening now, and no one will be immune from it.
I just remind members that as a matter of basic courtesy, members standing and seeking to catch my eye should not simultaneously be fiddling
with their electronic devices. I would have thought the point was so obvious as a matter of courtesy, but apparently not. Mr. Christopher Pincher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I ask the Prime Minister whether he will ensure that the activities of Damian McBride, the King of Smears and Spin under Labour, will also form part of the investigation that he undertakes?
They don't like hearing about it opposite because they know they had people working in Downing Street whose conduct was absolutely despicable. And that is a contrast that they can't avoid.
Mr. Toby Perkins.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister seems to be suggesting that his appointment of Andy Coulson was a huge success. In actual fact, Paul Stevenson's made it absolutely clear that that appointment prevented him giving information to the Prime Minister that he would otherwise have done.
Absolutely.
Now, is it not fundamentally obvious to everyone that the Prime Minister made a dramatic error of judgment in appointing Andy Coulson, not with the benefit of hindsight?
We've got the order, order, order. Questions are becoming longer and longer, and they need to get shorter. Prime Minister.
What I say very simply, the Honourable Gentleman, check the transcript of what Sir Paul Stevenson and John Yates said yesterday, and they think that Edward Llewellyn behaved entirely appropriately, as do I, and as does the person sitting next to him, too.
Mr. Alan Cairns.
In 2006, the Information Commissioner published two reports expressing concerns about the risks of phone hacking. For the sake of the victims, does the Prime Minister regret that no action was taken at that time?
I think it is a matter of regret, and frankly, both front benches have got to accept this, that warnings from the Information Commissioner, from the Select Committees, weren't heeded. And we have to recognise that there were issues around relations with media groups that made that happen, and we've got to get to the bottom of how we stop that from happening again, and I hope we can address that in the debate.
Mr. McKinnell.
Prime Minister, tell the House the details of any appropriate conversations he had relating to the B-Sky B bid, specifically with Rebecca Brooks and James Murdoch on the 23rd of December and with Rebecca Brooks on Boxing Day 2010.
What I've done, which no Prime Minister has done before, is set out all of the details of the meetings and explain that all of the conversations were appropriate, something backed by Rebecca Brooks yesterday. Now, if she wants to help with this issue, she could ask the leader of her party to be equally transparent, because he's not being transparent.
Chris Heaton-Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Following on from my honourable friend's question from Amber Valley, does the Prime Minister join me in hoping that this is the end of the ever-increasing rise of the press officer that's been paid for by police constabularies across the country?
Well, I would be a little bit careful about this. Look, the police have to have an operation, have to have a relationship with the media, both at the top level to communicate what the police is trying to do strategically, and at the operational level, they've got to work with the local press to help beat crime. So there is, if you like, an appropriate relationship they should have. We've got to try and make sure they don't have an inappropriate relationship.
M. Jones.
Prime Minister, have you ever uttered the word B Sky B in the presence of Rebecca Brooks, Rupert Murdoch or James Murdoch?
I you know...
Mr. Matthew Hancock!
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Doesn't it raise serious questions about how the previous government operated that members opposite seem to think it would have been appropriate for the Prime Minister to be briefed on operational police matters? And don't the emails that were released show just what a professional his Chief of Staff is?
I thank my honourable friend for putting that on the record, because it is right. The judgment he reached was backed in advance by the Permanent Secretary at Number 10 and has been subsequently backed by the leading police officers and indeed by the head of the Home Affairs Select Committee.
Andrew Miller.
Returning to Neil Wallis, clearly the Prime Minister said it was only Sunday that he knew about Mr. Wallis's role, but others around him knew of Mr. Wallis's role well before that. Doesn't he feel let down by them, including by Mr. Coulson?
The point I make is, you know, to the best of my knowledge, the first I knew was Sunday. We are now getting to the bottom of what this informal advice was, and when we have the information about that, just as we have been transparent about all the media meetings, about all the meetings with the moguls, about everything else, we can then make that information available. Now, while he's doing that, he should have a word with his party leader and ask him to be equally transparent.
This is Eleanor Lang.
Mr. Speaker, does the Prime Minister agree with me that the vast majority of people in the country whom we in this House represent are absolutely fed up with the party political point scoring of the Westminster Village that has been going on here, but that they will warmly welcome his setting up of the inquiries today, will hope that the inquiries will get on with their work, and that the Prime Minister will be able to get on with his work of improving the economy of this country and representing this country in an international field.
Yeah. I think the British public are very wise about this. They want us to get on with this. They want us to fix this problem. Frankly, they know that both parties did a lot of sucking up to the media in their time. They absolutely know that. They want us to get on with it, work together and sort it out.
Mr. Gavin Shuker.
I'm extremely grateful, Mr. Speaker. In his statement, the Prime Minister said, if it turns out I've been lied to, that would be the moment for a profound apology. I have to say this more in sadness than in anger, but isn't it exactly these phrases that leads the public to hold our profession in contempt? And I do invite him now, I don't know whether it's the politically expedient thing to do, but to give an apology.
I'm not sure. Earlier what I said is I'm extremely sorry and deeply regret the whole furore this has kicked off. I said that. You ought to listen. The second point I made is that with 20/20 hindsight, knowing everything that subsequently happened, I wouldn't have offered him the job, and to be fair to Andy Coulson, he wouldn't have taken the job. But what I don't believe in politicians doing is somehow trying to shuffle off their responsibility. Look, I made this decision. I employed this person. I defend his record working in government. If it turns out he lied to me about what happened before, that is an even deeper apology, even deeper regret than what I've expressed today. I'm telling you what I feel about this, how I act as a politician about this. That's no more than you can do.
Jane Ellison.
Speaker, the Prime Minister has challenged us all to deal with the consequences of these events. And does he not agree with me that a good start would be if the opposition were a little bit more realistic about the extent of their own recent contacts with News International, especially considering that on the 22nd of April of this year, the Leader of the Opposition, in a feature-length interview with a national newspaper, said in response to a question about whether he could yet unveil his new policies, said, "You will read it first in the Sun."
That is, if you like, my point. We've all engaged in this activity. The public know we've all engaged in this activity, and we should all be honest about the facts so we can try and move on.
Ms. Doherty.
Speaker, was Mrs. Brooks lying yesterday when she said it was the Chancellor's bright idea to hire Andy Coulson?
The Chancellor has many bright ideas, and the Chancellor and I discuss many things, but in the end, I never seek to shuffle off my responsibilities. This was my decision. I'm accountable for it.
Gavin Barwell.
Mr. Speaker, one of the Leader of the Opposition's main charges in his statement was that the reason the Commissioner didn't tell the Home Secretary or the Prime Minister about the appointment of Neil Wallace was because of the position of Andy Coulson. 10 minutes later, the Right Honourable Member for Hull West and Hessel said that when he was the Home Secretary, he wasn't informed about that appointment. Doesn't that rather blow the Leader of the Opposition's argument out of the water?
Yes. Yeah.
Even from Nigeria, I was able to follow the Home Secretary's excellent statement where she made precisely this point, referring to what the former Home Secretary has said. So I do think this rather blows away part of his very flimsy case.
Yeah. Sheila Gilmore.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. From the time I was elected to this House, I've had constituents contact me on a regular basis about the BSkyB takeover and their concerns with it. In the early part of this year, particularly about the question of undertakings being given or offered from an organisation which already proved to break its undertakings. At any point did the Prime Minister discuss the possibility of undertakings being given with anyone from News International?
Frankly, I've answered this question. I basically took myself out of the whole decision-making process about BSkyB. I think, now having looked at what has happened, I would argue that the Culture, Media and Sport Secretary of State has taken a series of absolutely correct decisions on the basis of the legal information that he received.
Lapple.
Mr. Speaker, there are very few places in the world where the Leader of the Executive would come and subject himself to 2 hours of questioning. One thing that does shame our democracy, though, is that there are elements within this House that seem to make political capital over the phone hacking of Millie Dowler.
Well, as someone once famously said, I'm enjoying this, so... But the point is, he's right. He is right to draw attention to the fact that at the heart of all of this is the issue of...
I've been enjoying listening to the questions and answers as well, but I want to continue that enjoyment and to hear what the Prime Minister is saying. The Prime Minister.
I really want to make the point, John, he's right, that at the heart of all this, as we have all these debates and discussions, is we must bear in mind the victims of phone hacking, chief of which is the family of Billy Dowler.
Dr. Therese Coffey.
Nigel Pickover, one of my constituents, is editor of the Evening Star and recently wrote to the Prime Minister and was grateful for his response. Is it fair to say that local newspapers have not been so far implicated in this, and we should welcome their campaigns, their local in journalism, and that we should support local press wherever they are?
Yeah. No, they play an absolutely vital role in the health of our local democracy and the health of our constituencies and what I call the big society. Clearly the inquiry has to go wherever the evidence leads, to all newspapers, but I think regional and local newspapers play a very important part of our country.
Glyn Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe that most members of this House will welcome and greatly support the inquiries that the Prime Minister have settled to get to the bottom of issues that have faced this government and previous governments. But will he emphasise the urgency with which we must deal with these issues so that we can get back to dealing with all the other issues that are so important to our constituents?
I think the Honourable Gentleman is right. We have to crack this, we have to deal with it, we have to do it in a way that restores public confidence, but then we must get on to the other things our constituents care passionately about.
Mr. George Howarth.
Given the importance of the B Sky B decision to the balance of broadcasting in this country, why did the Prime Minister think it necessary to take himself outside of the decision-making process?
I think I'm going to go further in a minute in my speech and suggest it may be the case that we should take politicians out of all decisions about media mergers altogether. But I was recognising the fact that if you are the leader of a party, you are trying to win over newspapers and television and all the rest of it. So the more you can take yourself out of decisions about future media structures, frankly, the better for all concerned. And I don't understand why he doesn't get that.
Bob Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's quite clear that relationships between our political leaders and leadership in the media are going to continue. And so, therefore, would my right honourable friend agree with me? It's up to our political leaders and this House to get a system for dealing with this that's sound, proper, transparent and healthy as soon as we can.
I agree with him, and I'm going to address this directly in the speech I make in a moment. This is an opportunity to reset the clock, and we should take it.
Karen.
Mr. Speaker, can I ask the Prime Minister, in all sincerity, to disassociate himself from the comment from the member from Wolverhampton South West?
I can
assure the Prime Minister, despite the debates that are going on here, there is not one member on the opposition benches who is seeking to make political capital out of that.
Listen to the question. Listen to the question.
Can I ask the Chancellor particular to pay attention to the last part of my remarks? I can assure this chamber, in the deepest sincerity, there is not one person, I believe, in this chamber seeking to make political capital out of the phone hacking. I am deeply disappointed I'm not being heard. Out of the phone, let me tell the Prime Minister directly, there is not one person who is willing.
Order, I must just ask the Honourable Lady now to ask a single question in a sentence.
Will the Prime Minister disassociate himself from comments that allege that members on this side of the chamber are seeking to make political capital out of the phone hacking of Millie Dowler?
I don't question her motives, but the point about this place is people can watch what's been said and they can form their own judgments.
Mr. Chris Skidmore.
As a matter of public record and as part of the public inquiry, will the Prime Minister ask Sir Gussel Dunnell to publish any record of meetings held between special advisers at numbers 10 and 11 Downing Street since the year 2000?
Well, tempting as it would be, under our system, politicians in one government cannot order the publication of papers in another government, fascinating though it might sometimes be.
Mr. Michael Ellis.
Speaker, the Home Affairs Select Committee issued a report at 5 o'clock this morning which was critical of police who whose evidence yesterday and last week included, frankly, attempts to pass the buck to alleged wrongdoers for not cooperating with the police. Would the Prime Minister agree with me that alleged wrongdoers often don't cooperate with the police, and the police should follow the evidence where it takes them?
The police must absolutely do that. They know that that is what everyone in this House wants. They know it's what the country expects. They now have a properly resourced police investigation. It's under new leadership, and we all wish them well with what they're doing.
Mr. Daniel Kaczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One group of people whom we have not discussed today are the hugely powerful trade union bosses and the extraordinary influence they have over the Leader of the Opposition. Will this inquiry look into their contacts with Rupert Murdoch and his organisations?
Well, I think it's ingenious after 136 questions to come up with something entirely new, and so I pay tribute to my honourable friend. I'm sure the judge will be able to look at all vested interests and the power that they wield in our country.
I thank the Prime Minister and all members. I was advised it was 138, but we'll settle for 136 members who have had the opportunity to question the Prime Minister, and I thank everyone for participating. We do want to move on, order, we do want to move on to the debate, I think pretty speedily, but I shall briefly attend to points of order. Mr. Robert Flello.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During his statement, the Prime Minister said that Alistair Campbell had falsified government documents. I'm sure there's many people would like to see the evidence for that. Will the Speaker ask the Prime Minister to arrange for that evidence to be placed in the House of Commons Library?
The reason why I won't is that the point the Honourable Gentleman has raised, they're very important to him and possibly to others, represents a continuation of the debate, and we mustn't use points of order for that purpose. Point of order, Mr. Mark Reckless.
Mr. Speaker, is it an order for a witness to refuse to answer a Select Committee question, as the noble Lord MacDonald did yesterday when I asked him how much he was being paid by News Corporation, and is it not in the public interest that he so disclose, given his role as DPP in limiting the police inquiry?
What I would say to the honourable gentleman, and this is the first I've heard of this, is that witnesses before Select Committees should seek to be as helpful as possible to committees, and they have a general obligation to furnish those committees with answers to the best of their ability. I hope that answer is helpful to the honourable gentleman. Point of order, Mr. Ben Bradshaw.
The Prime Minister said earlier that the New York Times revelations contained no new information, but the police considered the information new enough to reopen their inquiries. Would you care to correct the record?
That too is a continuation of the debate, for which I remind the House there will be full opportunity in the full debate that is about to follow. Point of order, Mr. I hope it is. Mr. Dennis McShane.
So do I, sir. So do I. In general, Mr. Speaker, is it in order for any honourable right honourable member of this House, Prime Minister or backbencher, to make a defamatory statement on the dispatch box?
Members should take responsibility for their own statements, and of course members should not make defamatory statements about other members, but the honourable, right honourable gentleman is raising his point of order in the abstract. Therefore, for me, it becomes hypothetical, and the Speaker, I think wisely, doesn't seek to respond to hypothetical questions. Point of order, I hope it's the last. Mr. Robert Halfon.
In your early remarks about reviewing the security given the incident yesterday, will you ensure that the public continue to have the right to go to Select Committees and their right is not restricted?
Grateful to the honourable gentleman for his point of order. That right to attend meetings in the way the honourable gentleman describes is a very long established and precious freedom. I think it would be quite wrong for me to seek to constrain or circumscribe an independent investigation in what it can cover and what it can recommend. But the point that the honourable gentleman has made is an important one. I've underlined its importance, and I think many people will share his point of view.